This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's subject is allergy and all its manifestations. This great new book, it's entitled The Allergy Solution, The Surprising Hidden Truth About Why You Were Sick and How to Get Well. And we reviewed the book in this week's newsletter, and you can find that review at drhoffman.com. It's by my esteemed colleague, Dr. Leo Galland, who's been a frequent contributor here on Intelligent Medicine, along with co-author Jonathan Galland, who is his son. And together they've written a great book that kind of comprehensively tackles the subject, as he so often does with his previous excellent books, The Fat Resistance Diet, Power Healing, and Super Immunity for Kids, all classics. For those of you not familiar with Dr. Galland, he's a board-certified internist, and I really consider him truly a mentor to me personally. Many of the concepts that we talk about on Intelligent Medicine were foretold literally decades ago by Dr. Galland, such important concepts as the yeast connection, dysbiosis, leaky gut syndrome, the importance of magnesium, the importance of essential fatty acids. He was on top of all those, way ahead of the curve. He was educated at Harvard University and NYU School of Medicine. He's also a recipient of the Linus Pauling Award for a bold new approach toward healing. Dr. Galland has been featured in many publications, including the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and many other venues. And he's appeared on TV, The Today Show, Good Morning America, PBS, CNN, and elsewhere. And so without further ado, here's Dr. Leo Galland. Leo, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Hey, it's always great to join you, you know, on your podcast, Ron. And, you know, it's always fantastic to interact with you in presenting this information.
Well, thank you very much. And so, you know, this is a topic that you really kind of expand the lens on, because people tend to think of allergy as just sneezing, wheezing, and itching. Hey, that's a classical definition of allergy, but you really take a more comprehensive view towards allergy in this book.
Well, you know, one of the big themes of the book, which is a reflection of what I've seen in my practice over the past 35 years, and that I'm sure you've seen also, I know you've seen also, are the many masks that allergies wear, and just the many ways in which allergies are contributing to problems that that people would never think of as being allergic, which have included weight gain, chronic fatigue, headaches, joint pains, muscle aches. They masquerade as autoimmune disorders and conditions like fibromyalgia, you know, or migraine headache. And so I think one of the important messages is that if you have symptoms that are chronic, especially if they fluctuate in intensity, that are being suppressed by drugs, or in which the drugs aren't working to suppress them, and that affect almost any organ system in your body or combination of systems, you really need to think about whether an allergic reaction is a contributing cause to those symptoms. And I think recognizing the extent of the allergy epidemic in the world creates a greater degree of urgency to uncovering the allergic roots of chronic ailments.
So is this a modern phenomenon? You know, why is it that, you know, God and nature equipped us with an immune system that goes so terribly awry? Is this a product of our current environment or diet, or you know, what's going on?
It's absolutely modern. Ancient textbooks have, and even old, not-so-ancient textbooks, don't mention anything that really sounds like hay fever, for example, or modern allergic phenomena. Yeah, there's maybe a report of a pharaoh being stung by a bee and, you know, having what would be an anaphylactic reaction. But the whole concept only began to emerge in towards the middle of the 19th century. It is absolutely a post-industrial phenomenon. And allergy is the result of toxicity. And that's the conclusion that I came to after reviewing extensive research that's been done. But the toxicity is complicated. It occurs at three levels of the environment: outdoors, indoors, and internal, the environment in our gut. And it's at each of those levels, there's a strong effect of food on how susceptible we are to the toxicity that occurs. And the allergy itself is, that's something that is built into our immune systems as a kind of a high-cost, last-ditch protective measure. So what happens with classic allergies? You sneeze, you cough, your lungs, your bronchial tubes constrict, you scratch at your skin, you get diarrhea or vomiting. These are all mechanisms by which the body protects itself from something that's noxious and is harmful. And so that the mechanism of allergy is built into our bodies, everyone's body. I don't think there's anyone in the world that doesn't have a potential to be subject to allergy. It's just that for a variety of reasons, many of them genetic, but many of them also due to previous life experiences, we vary in how easily that protective response gets activated. But it is a very high cost protective response that today is activated in a third to 50% of the population under conditions where there's really minimal exposure.
So let's drill down on these three compartments, internal, dietary, and external environment. External environment, I think, is important in this book because you teamed with your son, Jonathan Galland, who is an environmental activist, and there's a very much of an environmental activism bent in the book, you know, that what we've done to our ecosystem has a lot to do with why we're experiencing such a high degree of allergy. So what's going on there? How do the chemicals and all that stuff trigger things?
We have made the world in which we live an allergenic world. And this has happened because of the different ways in which we've polluted it. And if we just take something, I mean, there's so many ways in which these things interact. It's kind of like a tapestry of effects as you step back and look at it. And it was very exciting to me putting this together. It reminded me of something that I had thought about looking at a painting by Van Gogh. If you stand as close to a Van Gogh painting or an Impressionist painting as the artist would have had to have been when he was painting it, all you see are splashes of color.
Right, right.
And then when you step back, a few feet, then this vivid image emerges. When you're in clinical practice and you're dealing with individual patients, you're kind of dealing with the splashes of color.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you step back to write a book and to try and make sense of what you're seeing with patients, and the effects and the results, and combining that with the extensive body of research that we reviewed for this book, then it's like, you know, stepping back from an impressionist painting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and you can see the patterns, and it's like, wow, this is really amazing, the way all of these things have fit together to create this perfect storm that is affecting our world and our health in huge ways that had been unanticipated. So let me just give you some examples of how this happens.
Sure.
We'll start with outdoor pollution. Industrial and automotive pollution does the following things. Number one, it exposes us to damaging things in the air. If you live in New York, that damage is going on all the time. But it also affects the plants in the environment in which we live, so that the plants themselves become more allergenic to some extent because of the increase in carbon dioxide. But there are also other factors, especially from diesel exhaust particles. So air pollution increases the amount of pollen that ragweed and grass put out, for example. And then what things like diesel exhaust and automotive fumes do is they actually make that pollen release more of its allergenic components. So you get, as a result of outdoor pollution, you get an increase in the pollen count, and you get an increase of the release of allergens by the pollen. And there's one other factor, which is that pollen itself is toxic. It's not just some totally benign substance that plants use to create more plants. Pollen grains contain an enzyme that damages the lining of your nose and lungs when you breathe it in. And so you get all of these factors that combine together to make the environment in which you live more likely to create allergies. And we're just talking about the outdoor environment. Now, there have been some fascinating studies done on nutritional factors that impact on how susceptible people are to the outdoor environment making them more allergic.
Because we're both familiar with the phenomenon of taking a patient who's quite allergic and undertaking a major diet modification, say getting rid of dairy and gluten, or putting a patient on a quasi-paleo diet, and their whole allergy bucket empties out, and their cup doesn't runneth over anymore into allergy symptoms.
Right, right. And of eliminating the inflammatory foods and the food allergens is critical. What the research has done, and that's something that we do clinically, what the researchers at universities don't do that kind of thing, though. They're much more sort of focused, and it's amazing what they've come up with. There's this study done at UCLA in which they took people with pollen allergies, and they exposed them to diesel exhaust particles at the level that they would encounter if they were walking under an overpass by a freeway in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not ridiculous. I mean, it's the kind of thing that a lot of people in L.A., assuming that they walk,
or stuck on 405 on the way to the valley.
Yeah, right, right. Would run into, and then they expose them to pollens to which they were allergic, and of course the diesel exhaust particles dramatically increased the allergic response to the pollen. Then they fed them a broccoli sprout homogenate. Basically broccoli sprouts, equivalent to eating about 6 ounces of raw broccoli a day, but it was in a powder from the sprouts. Within 3 days, and it only took 3 days, the broccoli sprouts blocked the ability of diesel exhaust particles to aggravate the allergic reactions.
Wow.
And it did it by dramatically enhancing the detoxifying capabilities of the cells that they took from these people. Mm-hmm.
And these, so, by the way, these broccoli sprout products were originally developed by Paul Talalay at Johns Hopkins, targeting cancer, and now we're seeing that products like Broccomax may have utility in autism, even according to some recent studies, and you say allergies as well. Very interesting.
Right, and of course, autism is a disorder in which allergies play an important role. It's fundamentally a disorder of the immune system for most of the autistic kids, and I think the mechanisms and I think it's the detoxifying enhancement effect of the cruciferous vegetables that do this. And so what we've done, the thing about broccoli is there are a lot of great nutrients in cruciferous vegetables and in broccoli, but if you cook it, if you cook them, you destroy a critical enzyme, which is an enzyme that liberates the most important detoxifier in broccoli, which is sulforaphane. The problem with trying to just take sulforaphane is it's very unstable and it breaks down really quickly. So the best way to get it would be to eat broccoli that's raw. When you chew the raw broccoli, you liberate the enzyme so that it creates the sulforaphane, and it's fresh and you absorb it. Now, there is a way to accomplish that same effect without just having to eat tons of raw broccoli every day, or even 6 ounces of raw broccoli a day, which is either to use broccoli sprouts or an extract of broccoli sprouts, or to take cooked broccoli and add fresh daikon radish to it. Mm-hmm. So we have a recipe for a soup in the allergy solution. We call it the immune balance soup, and it's part of the process that I call the power wash. There's broccoli and parsley and kale and carrots and turmeric in the soup. Really tastes quite good. But then just before serving it, you grate some daikon radish and add it fresh. And the fresh daikon enhances the nutrient value of the broccoli by liberating the stable component, nutritional component in the broccoli, that is then turned into sulforaphane.
That's
by the enzyme.
There's a lot of
nutritional tricks.
Yeah, there's something called diastase, I think, in daikon. That is it has an enzymatic effect. It's also
right. Myrosinase is the name of the enzyme in broccoli.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Myrosinase, yeah. And so there are a lot of nutritional tricks that we pull together to find ways to enhance the value of food to enhance detoxification, you know, with specific foods or food combinations.
So,
and that we incorporated into the approach.
So you also talk about, you know, another bucket, you know, is that you can be allergic to what's inside of you. And you've been a real pioneer in characterizing the microbiome. And now that's all the rage. You know, we're linking the microbiome to any number of disorders.
That's been an area that I've, you know, written and lectured about from before the time the word microbiome existed, you know, going back into the early 1980s. And when I first started, and what I realized, I got interested in it because I realized that there were a lot of patients who required IV nutrition in order to heal. And I realized that if you really fixed what was going on in a person's gut, that they didn't need IV nutrition anymore. And so I started exploring all different aspects of gut health and realized the importance of normal bacteria for maintaining health, and for preventing this phenomenon of leaky gut. You know, when I first started writing about this, I see patients who said, well, my gastroenterologist said, there's no such thing as a leaky gut. Well, that doesn't happen anymore, because for the past several years, the concept of leaky gut and imbalance of the gut bacteria has just made it into the mainstream medical literature. And it is one of the most important emergent concepts in mainstream medicine today. Of course, the researchers don't really know what to do about it. They're only able to demonstrate how important it is. Those of us who have been working on gut health as one of the cornerstones of systemic health for years have developed approaches to doing that, and I try to bring them together in the allergy solution. The program that I describe is something I call the ARC program, A-R-C, for avoidance, reforestation, and cultivation. And one of its goals is to establish a healthy gut by establishing a diverse microbiome. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that all of the science does agree upon is that a healthy gut requires a great diversity of microbes and microbial types. It's very much like a rainforest. You know, biodiversity is necessary for health. Mm-hmm. And I've compared the contents of your gut to like your own personal rainforest.
Indeed, that's I think an important analogy, because you know we talk about maintaining ecological diversity in the Amazon jungle. We are, according to studies, losing our microbial diversity in our intestinal tracts, and that's often correlated with health problems.
It definitely is, and it's specifically correlated with allergy, and the reasons for that are pretty clear. One is the modern Western diet, which is high in unhealthy fats and sugars and refined carbs, and low in fiber, and low in the kinds of phytonutrients like bioflavonoids that encourage diversity of bacteria. Bioflavonoids in food kind of act like conductors, and there are 400 flavonoids in the human diet, and they're all needed, and they all interact with the bacteria that grow in our gut to encourage diversity in the growth of species. And then there's the presence of antibiotics and pesticides and herbicides, mm-hmm. In the food that we eat.
Do you feel that GMO foods actually may contribute to that? Because there's some controversy
absolutely.
As to whether the ability to resist glyphosate results in a lot of glyphosate getting into the gut, or even these certain bioengineered plant products that elaborate their own antibiotics in the gastrointestinal tract may deplete certain microbes.
That can definitely happen. And the glyphosate story, I think, is a really critical story, because the reason that Monsanto has developed GMO foods is to permit industrial scale agriculture in which Roundup, glyphosate, is sprayed over crops kind of indiscriminately. It kills everything except the crops that come from the seeds that were bioengineered by Monsanto to be resistant. Mm-hmm. And there is no way that the food that is grown from those seeds is not contaminated with glyphosate, which is classified by Monsanto as an antibiotic. Mm-hmm. And when chickens are exposed to glyphosate, there is a change in their gut bacteria, there's a loss of diversity, and an overgrowth of unhealthy, undesirable organisms. And here's the thing about the microbiome that is not adequately appreciated. It's proven, but it's not adequately discussed by any of the people writing about it. It's the relationship between the microbiome and inflammation. Mm-hmm. See, inflammation changes the microbiome. And it encourages the growth of bacteria which actually promote more inflammation. Mm-hmm. The way that it does this is very simple. When you have inflammation, you have liberation of a gas in the tissues called nitric oxide. Mm-hmm. And nitric oxide breaks down into nitrates. So inflamed tissue has a buildup of a residue of nitrates. And in your gut, that encourages the growth of nitrate-loving bacteria. Mm-hmm. Most of the And bacteria like E. coli and the most important pathogens for humans, they're all in that category. Their growth is encouraged by nitrates. And those are bacteria that then encourage more inflammation. And from the perspective of the bacteria, it makes sense. You love to live in a nitrate-rich environment. You're going to do everything you can to get the host that you live in to give you more nitrates.
Mm. It's sort of like, you know, so it's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's it's in effect they kind of take over, and it's remarkable because people have told me the candida is making me crave more sweets. And I used to say, well, that's just an excuse, you know, you have deficient willpower. But actually, there may be some truth to that assumption that there's changes in your appetite.
Definitely. It's in terms of, I think it definitely happens as a result of the microbiome changes. In the case of inflammation, it's a definite vicious cycle. Inflammation changes the microbes, and it encourages the growth of microbes that then promote more inflammation. And that's why you can't just take a probiotic and solve all your problems. Because the probiotics that you put in there are not going to be able to live in the environment that exists. I mean, I have so many patients that say to me, gee, I'm taking all these probiotics, but my stool test still shows that I don't have any good bacteria.
Right.
You see it all the time because you have to deal with the inflammation first. So the first step in the ARC program before reflorestation is avoidance. You got to get the bad guys out of there, and you got to get the inflammation out of there. And that is one of the reasons why identifying food allergens is so important, because you've got to get the allergenic foods out before you can start repopulating with healthy bacteria.
Okay, on that
That's
note,
why we start with the power wash.
Okay, great. On that note, let's pause because our listeners know that we divide these podcasts into two parts. A fascinating discussion of allergies, and it's all to be found in a new book that'll be out next month. It's available for pre-sale on Amazon and the usual sites. The Allergy Solution by today's guest, Dr. Leo Galland. We'll be right back in just a moment.
And there's a huge preview.
And there's a preview there as well. Great.
Huge preview on Amazon, yeah. Great. 40, 50 pages of the book right now.
Oh, that's very generous. Okay, so you get a little foretaste by going to Amazon. And by the way, do you have a website yet for the book? Is that up?
Published? DrGalland.com.
Great.
DrGalland.com. You can go to the book page.
Good.
The Allergy Solution.
Okay, so we'll pause, and when we return, more on the subject of The Allergy Solution by today's guest, Dr. Leo Galland. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.